I don't think we've had anybody on to talk about like romantic getaways yet or couples travel, but this episode isn't just for couples. I want to go ahead and say that really fast before anybody clicks off this episode. If you are not in a relationship.
When you think of honeymoon, what do you think of?
Bali.
Bali? That's the Hawaii. Place that you think of?
I don't know. I think of somewhere like romantic and usually tropical, kind of relaxing, but there's still stuff to do. I don't know. Everybody's idea of what a honeymoon should be is a little bit different.
And while in this episode, we do talk a lot about honeymoon destinations, we also talk about what it's like to travel as a couple internationally around the world and what that looks like. Because if you're traveling individually, you are in charge of your schedule. You get to do whatever you want to do. But when you invite somebody else in as a couple, now you've got to take care of what each person wants to do. And we get into that on this episode.
Yeah. So as you know, Chris and I typically travel as a couple since we're married. But this episode isn't just for the couples out there. If you're listening to this episode and you travel with a family or you travel solo or with a group, however you travel, these places that we talk about traveling to and even the categories of travel are accessible to all. It is not specifically for the honeymooners, although that is very much a niche.
In this episode, we're talking with Kat from Worldwide Honeymoon. And if you don't know what Worldwide Honeymoon is, it's a very big blog and podcast focused on honeymoon destinations or trips with couples. And we thought, hey, who better to talk about honeymoon locations than somebody who owns a website with the word honeymoon in it?
Yeah, our 10th anniversary will be coming up in a couple of years. I really want to do something big for that. Not that we've talked about that yet.
What do you want
we
to
don't,
do?
We've never done anything like a big anniversary. I mean, we haven't had that many big anniversaries, I guess. But our 10th anniversary is coming up, and it'd be so cool to start now, 2 years ahead, start planning for what that could be.
Is the 10th anniversary, is that 10?
It is
like,
10.
Yeah, like yeah. The metal 10.
Please don't get me anything 10. I'd rather go to South Africa or something.
I'm thinking like popcorn comes in those 10 buckets.
Okay. Anyway, without further ado, this is our conversation with Kat from Worldwide Honeymoon. Oh, we should say this is not, it's a duo and her husband is not able to be here today, but her husband's name is Chris. So usually it's Chris and Kat, but we get just Kat today and the conversation is so much fun. All right. But before we get to the episode, if you could please leave us a rating or a review or both on Spotify and iTunes, that would help us out immensely. Chris is always begging for your reviews and your help, but I am today because it really does help creators like us be shared and help other people discover our podcast. So
Sarah, I'm so proud of you.
I know you are. I knew you would be. I got it this time. I can say it. Anyway, all right. This is our conversation with Kat from Worldwide Honeymoon.
Kat, thank you for being here. We can already tell that we are going to enjoy this conversation. One, you're from Ohio, or you live in Ohio anyway. And because Ohio, I'm born in Ohio, I like Ohio. And then two, you like to travel. You and your husband love to travel. So thanks for being on the show. Let's dive in. Like, who are you? What do you do? What's your life's ambitions? All that good stuff.
It's a lot. Do what you will.
Well, thanks for having me, first of all. So, but tell me about yourself. I would say, so we kind of talked about this before we started recording, but I am from a tiny town kind of in the middle of nowhere, Kentucky, called Brooksville, so close to Maysville. That's how most people sort of recognize it who are also from Kentucky. But I grew up on a mini farm in a rural kind of farming area in Kentucky. And so I wasn't initially a big traveler at first. It wasn't until I went to university and got to study abroad in France that I kind of fell in love with travel. And that's sort of where my travel bug came from. And my husband had really only ever been, Chris, he had only really ever been to like Hawaii and Alaska as a kid, and then just like other trips to see family and friends because they're sort of scattered everywhere. So it was when we met that I was like, hey, what's the number one trip, your bucket list trip? And he was like, oh, I want to go on a safari in Africa. And I started talking to a company and was like, hey, how can we plan this? How much is it going to cost? And we sat down to dinner one night at a restaurant and I gave him this itinerary and was like, you just have to pay this and we can go. And he was like, whoa. So that's sort of what kicked off his travel bug, is realizing that you don't have to necessarily wait until you're retired to do some of these big trips, and just, you know, you can start putting yourself out there. Because that was his first big trip off of the continent.
That's a big one.
Yeah.
That's going to sound huge. Huge trip.
Wow. So that's kind of how we got started. And I was an accountant before doing this full time. So I have two travel blogs. France Voyager, which is just about France, and then Worldwide Honeymoon, of course, which is about couples travel and honeymoons, and then a podcast as well called the Worldwide Honeymoon Travel Podcast that I co-host with Chris. So that's kind of what I do full time, whereas my husband works full time.
Okay.
So.
Wow, cool.
That's a lot of content to
produce. That's a lot.
That's a lot, a lot. Yeah. The blogging world's new to us, but I know podcasting alone is like a full-time gig. So a lot of respect for you. So you do focus primarily on like couples travels, and we haven't had anybody on to talk about this yet, but I feel like the whole niche of like honeymoon or, you know, couples travel is, it's definitely a niche. So how should we start out talking about this? Like, I want to ask your favorite destinations, maybe like the best luxurious ones, maybe the best budget ones. Where should we go first? I'm going to let you choose this.
I think though, we're going to like, let's just pivot. And how do you, how do you decide with your husband where you're going to go? Like how, what's that communication look like? You're looking at the computer, you're like, hey, we're going here? Or is it real? Is it a dialogue between the two?
It's definitely a dialogue. We both love Excel. So we do a lot of our travel planning and things in Excel.
Yes.
And we will just sit down sometimes and brainstorm places we want to go to. And we sort of take turns. Like, we're going to the Galapagos at the end of this year. That was my husband's big bucket list trip.
Oh, cool.
Whereas I did a trip to South Africa earlier last year to go with my family and stuff. So we sort of take turns, the big bucket list trips in between some of our smaller trips that we take together. So that's mostly how we do it. Sometimes I do a little bit of like keyword research and stuff based on where other couples are traveling so I can write content about it. Mm-hmm. That's how we ended up going to St. Lucia last year, which was amazing. Yeah, so that's how I sort of, we both kind of brainstorm where we're going. But for the most part, it's we just take turns.
So cool. I love that, man. Yeah. Two massive trips, South Africa, like a safari and Galapagos. Those are like two bucket lists. I think like that and like Antarctica are three like extreme bucket list adventures for me.
So does pricing come into that, or is it more of the destination? You're like, hey, I want to go here, so let's figure out how to get here.
Yeah. Most of the time, we kind of figure out the destination and then figure out how much we need to save for it and do all of that stuff. So that's really helpful to do. I will say that there are some stuff, I mean, thankfully, the pandemic was terrible, but not traveling for so long really gave us a lot of extra travel money to where once it was finished or we were able to travel more, we were able to take some of our bigger bucket list trips. So that's kind of helped with the money saving aspect. But yeah, typically we kind of think of how long it would take us to save a certain amount of money for our trips. I will sometimes reach out for South Africa. I worked with one of the companies down there to help, and it certainly took off a lot of how much we had to pay for our trip, which helps too. So I will reach out for things like that. But yeah, I think figuring out the destination first, and then you kind of do the timing based upon how much you can save and that sort of thing, and figure out, being a former accountant, I like to figure out the full budget first and the itinerary. And then I'm like, okay, this is how much we need to save. This is how many months we sort of are looking at. How much do we need to save per month? Or do we need to reevaluate and think, hey, maybe this is a later trip if it's a little bit more expensive, like Antarctica, for example, because that is so expensive.
It is one day.
Yeah.
I was actually going to mention you being like an accountant and how that plays into your budgeting. Do you have any tips for people? I mean, like, are there certain tools you use, or how do you go about budgeting? I know everybody's budgets can be different, but everybody needs to budget in some way, probably.
Yeah, we both kind of have separate spreadsheets because I have one for my business and for different trips that I take. But then we also have our, you know, our big planning budget that we have each month that we update. And we're very much meticulous about all the dollars in, dollars out that we spend, just so we can put money into savings and retirement and travel and things like that. And we started doing that way back when, I think it was right before I quit my job to do this full time, because I was like, if I completely botch this and we don't really have much money to live on, we just have yours, how can we make this work? And that was kind of how we started doing this meticulous Excel spreadsheet that has like all of our utilities and everything that we need to save for. Yeah, so that's kind of how we do it. And then as a tool I use is a creator, is the QuickBooks. So
yeah,
I live by that.
Yep.
Yeah.
We know that one. Mm-hmm. Okay. Very cool.
Yeah.
So what does a trip look like for you? Is it weeks at a time, days or months, or like what is that? What's the time frame look like for you?
So I travel about a quarter of the year, and some of that is with Chris. He gets about 4 weeks off a year. So pretty much all of his PTO, we sort of take a lot of trips together for Worldwide Honeymoon. And then I will also do trips for France Voyager. So for the most part, it's usually weeks because he only gets 4 weeks off. So usually we'll have to do like a big 2 week trip during the year, and then potentially two separate 1 week trips or something like that, okay. Depending on what our schedules look like for the year. And then for me personally, I've got them for France. It's usually between like 2-3 weeks, just depending to get content.
Wow. Yeah. So you're back and forth to France a lot then.
A few times. I think I might be going like 4 times this year, wow. Different times. Just a bunch of, yeah. And well, we're going to the Olympics because that's happening in Paris this year. Yeah. No way. And Chris is coming along for that one. So he's really excited.
Cool. Oh, that's cool. Good content right there. Yeah. I am so excited for that. Yeah. I'm so jealous too.
Oh man.
You do a lot of like couples travel. Would you say that France is like the couple destination? Is that like your ultimate favorite? Or I mean, obviously you like it a lot.
You just say that because I'm Paris.
Well, right? I mean, yeah. And I've actually never been to France, so I don't know what it's like, but you hear it like the city of love and that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. What are your thoughts on that?
I think there are a lot of people that either love Paris or hate it. Mm-hmm. I love it. I love wandering the streets, going to the markets, going to the small museums. I think it's an incredibly romantic city. And when I went with Chris for the first time in 2019, when I took him there, he also fell in love with it, and he is not a big city guy. Okay. So it's definitely a very romantic city. I think France is very, very romantic. I would say Italy, of course, is, you know, it's kind of got everything from the beaches to the, you know, you've got Tuscany and all the wine country areas and the food. I mean, just all over Italy is also a fantastic place. Mm-hmm. For couples as well. At least as far as Europe, I think those are definitely the top two that a lot of people tend to look at, and probably Greece as well, just because of the islands and things.
Okay. So if you were to have an unlimited budget right now and you were to plan somebody's dream honeymoon, like where would you send them? Like if money were no object, I'm always curious. Like she's the pro of about like
she just
luxury.
Started shaking her head. She was like, "Why would you ask this question?"
One day I'd love to.
I gotta think about it.
Dream destination. If money were
if
no object.
Money. Yeah, exactly. That's the key. Because I was like, "Oh man, if money were no object, I would do probably like a Tanzania Seychelles sort of honeymoon."
Okay.
Because that's So Chris and I have been to quite a few. I guess countries. We've been to East Africa, we've been to Uganda and Kenya, and then South Africa and like Zimbabwe and Zambia.
Wow.
And the first time we ever went to South Africa, we absolutely fell in love with it. And I don't know, we were just like, we got to come back here, which we did last year. And then it's a whole other, just being out in nature and being that up close to wildlife and getting to see that is just incredible. So I would highly recommend doing some sort of like luxury glamping in, you know, that's Kenya, but in Tanzania, going to like the Serengeti and Ngorongoro crater, all of those great national parks for wildlife, and then maybe go to Zanzibar for some beach time if you'd like, and then also the Seychelles because it just looks absolutely stunning. I've never been, but I really want to go to the Seychelles. Like just the beaches and the boulders, and it just, you know, you can do snorkeling and diving and all that sort of thing, and you can just also just relax on the beach if you want to as well. But I think that adds more of a relaxation component versus the adventure going out on safari. I highly recommend if you get the chance to do a hot air balloon over the safari, especially if you're going during the Great Migration, because you get to like fly over the animals, and it's incredible. We did that in the Maasai Mara, and you do it at sunrise, and we flew like not that high over a bunch of zebras. Gosh. And it was the most incredible thing. Like that's recorded amazing. It and the whole time I'm freaking out being like, this is the coolest thing I've ever done. This is the coolest thing I've ever done.
Oh gosh, how cool.
So, that's really cool.
So yeah, I would say if money is absolutely no object, because that would be a very expensive trip.
I don't even know why I ask this, because like money is totally an object for us still. So
yeah. Yeah.
I'm just dreaming one day.
Same.
Yeah. One day.
Yeah.
So, wow.
Is there a place that's overrated in terms of couple travel? You're like, don't do that.
Or do this instead of that.
Yeah. Or do, yeah.
Mm. Oh, man.
I don't want to dump on a place.
I don't want, yeah. Like,
I know.
Well, I wasn't going to ask you, like, what would you get? Like, what would you, what's a place you would not go to?
Yeah. Maybe like what's overrated? Like, you know, maybe go to Croatia instead of Greece or something like that. Like, what would be go to this instead of that?
Yeah.
You're so negative. I think. This place sucks. No, I think that I used to like be kind of meh about Italy because I'd only gone to the major destinations in Italy. So like Florence and, you know, Rome, and we went to Naples and stuff like that. And I was just like, oh, like, I mean, the food's good and stuff, but like, I don't know. I just didn't get it. I actually recommend instead of going to the bigger hotspots in Italy, maybe doing some smaller destinations. And I feel like you get a much more authentic experience because when I went to Florence, I was like, I'm not meeting anybody else but other Americans here. Like it just doesn't feel as authentic as it once does. And I'm sure you could get away from that and get away from the tourists and stuff like that too in Florence. But I really enjoyed, Chris and I a couple years ago went to Piedmont and stayed in Alba, which is like a smaller town. And we went to Piedmont because my husband has a WSET level, I think level 2 certification. So he does a lot of wine and spirit stuff. And we went to Piedmont, which is home of like Barolo and Barbaresco and like these big Nebbiolo wines. And we absolutely fell in love with Piedmont because we went to the countryside, we saw the castles and the vineyards and like it was just such a fun experience to do that and far less crowded than like maybe Tuscany might be. And then we also went to Bologna and Modena in it's like Emilia-Romagna region. And that's just a big foodie area. It's not as crowded as some places are. And even in Rome, we kind of stayed in an area that wasn't as like right on top of all the tourist stuff. So we stayed in Trastevere. So it's more of a historical neighborhood, but far away from like the Trevi Fountain and the Colosseum and stuff. So basically don't avoid Italy, but maybe you might have a better experience if you go to maybe lesser frequented places in Italy. So instead of maybe the Cinque Terre, you go to like Taormina in Sicily or something, or things like that, or Puglia. I feel like you're going to have a better experience going to some smaller places, and you're going to get a lot more authenticity out of your trip than going to just the big spots.
That's good. So how do you find the smaller towns? Because I feel like small towns traveling can be kind of hit or miss. Like either they're really cute and quaint and they have stuff going on, or they're completely dead. And sometimes you don't know until you get there. So how do you go about finding those? And are these available like resources on your blog? Like, have you blogged about these smaller towns and that kind of thing?
Yes, so I do have blog posts about Piedmont and just like an off the beaten path Italy trip, that sort of thing. So I just do a lot of research. Like I'm pretty meticulous about researching things. Even for France Voyager, we did a road trip through Provence and stopped in towns along the Luberon, which are like Gourdes and Luméron and things like that. And you just kind of through your research, you do see other bloggers talking about it and stuff too. Because I know that there are some tiny towns where like you drive through it and you're not really missing anything. But yeah, if you look up like if you're going for a specific destination such as food or wine, like in Italy, we knew we wanted to go to Modena because that's where balsamic vinegar is from, and I love balsamic vinegar, and I wanted to like try that. Versus Alba is where to stay. It's a good city to stay in if you want to explore the wine region there. So I think that those just researching what you want to do can be really helpful in looking into cities and towns that are really good for that sort of thing.
Yeah, lots of research, I guess, is just the key.
So when it comes to like so when it comes to researching these towns, like when you make these trips, are they activity-based trips? Are they more like relaxation trips? Are they a mix of both? What kind of activities do you like to do?
It depends on the trip, but for the most part, we like activities. And my husband is an activities guy. We went to St. Lucia and we stayed at some all-inclusives. And he was still like, we're going to get up early and we're going to hike up Gros Piton. We're going to go snorkeling. We're going to like this man does not sit still, which is great because I also really enjoy hiking and, bike riding and all those things too, especially on trips. So I think, yeah, I mean, most of it's pretty activity based, but we do try to get a little bit of downtime, especially if it's like a beachy location where you can just sort of chill on the beach for a bit. But if it were up to my husband, I think it would be activities all the way. Because even on our honeymoon, we were in Southeast Asia and we went to this tiny island in Thailand called Koh Lipe. And you can just relax and do nothing. But that kid, I could not get him out of the water. He was just constantly snorkeling. He's like, look at these clownfish. So he's definitely an activities person. But it's nice to have a mix of both so you can have a little bit of downtime and take your time and not feel rushed doing everything.
I was actually just about to ask you where you all went for your honeymoon.
Yeah, we did 3 weeks in Southeast Asia. So we did a long layover in Seoul, just to kind of get out because they have free layovers there, which was great, or layover tours. And then we went to Hanoi, Halong Bay, Siem Reap, and then we went up to Chiang Mai, Koh Lipe, and these are in Thailand and Bangkok. Wow. And then we left from Bangkok. So it was, that was a really fun honeymoon.
Yeah. Those are some great places.
Lots of good food.
Yeah. And I know Southeast Asia tends to be a more affordable place for Americans to visit. Is that one reason you guys chose that? Do you have any tips on that?
Yes. That is a big reason. I had always wanted to travel there, mm-hmm. but I also knew that you could get 4 or 5 star hotels for so much cheaper than you could back here in the States or even in Europe and different places. So yeah, we stayed in like 4 or 5 star hotels and it was like less than $200 a night for the most part. Some of them were less than $100 a night.
Wow.
I remember Chris and I, we went to a restaurant in Vietnam and we both got like an appetizer, a main dish and a beer. And it was $6 by the time we got out of there. Wow. So very affordable. I mean, Thailand's a little bit more expensive than that, but it's a very affordable destination once you get there. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I mean, our honeymoon was not terribly expensive and I used miles and points.
Yep.
I started travel hacking and doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
Back when we were honeymoon planning, which was a great time to start doing that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, that's where I racked up miles and points to get us to fly business class to Southeast Asia, which was fantastic.
Oh yeah.
Pretty much that was a great, very worth it after, you know, the long haul flights and stuff.
Yeah. For sure. That's a good use of points.
That's a game changer.
That's my dream.
Yeah.
I'm going to fly back to Asia, which we will. I want to fly business class one day.
we were in Thailand and I surprised Sarah with this, like, it was a new resort that had just opened up in Chiang Mai. And I forget what we paid. It was
not much.
It was like maybe $75 a night or something. Like something.
We were literally the first guest to ever stay there.
We were the only guest to stay there.
Oh my gosh.
And so it was so funny because every room we walked in, there would be a person in that room, like with water, just like waiting to serve us. And we're like, we're okay. Like it was so awkward and, but so nice at the same time. I loved it.
Yeah. Also the breakfast buffets, like in Southeast Asia, they know how to put on a breakfast buffet.
They
like
do.
It's not your Holiday Inn where it's like overcooked scrambled eggs and like some dry sausages. It's like a full platter of things that you could, from fresh fruit to like meats and cheeses to soups, which I love soup and I love savory breakfast. So I was like, this is fantastic.
The fruit alone, but the hospitality in Thailand is just like top notch. The people there just, I mean, they call it the land of smiles for a reason because it's just so friendly and so hospitable.
Where did you guys go on your honeymoon?
We actually, Thailand actually is sort of the honeymoon.
Why?
Yeah.
So we had just moved when we got married. So we moved from North Carolina to Seattle and we had been there like a week when we got married and we eloped and then we just like wanted to get away. So we did like the Grand Canyon. We had never been there, wanted to do the desert. And then we took our honeymoon like what, 3 or 4 months later and went to Thailand for 2 months.
Yeah.
And loved it. So we were a lot of fun.
That's sweet.
Yeah, we stayed in Chiang Mai for most of the time.
Most of it.
Yeah, it was incredible. It was we had a lot of fun.
Yeah.
I love Chiang Mai. I would totally go back. All the khao soy.
Food's a whole other topic.
Oh yeah, it is. So you've got two different blogs happening, like two different resources, one specifically for France and the other one specifically for like couples traveling. Mm-hmm. So how do you go about creating, like in terms of, you know, creating content for couples, like what's in your mindset of like looking out for different destinations on like, hey, you know what, that is a good place to go. Or what are you thinking about when you're writing these articles or, you know, giving these tips?
A lot of people have different things that they want to do on their honeymoon. And I feel like everyone's honeymoon's kind of unique to each person. So I feel like almost anywhere can be a really cool honeymoon destination. So I've written about anything from honeymooning in Vermont, especially like in the fall, mm-hmm. where it's beautiful and you can go leaf peeping or, you know, going on safari and things like that. So I think a lot of it is like, okay, thinking of the mindset of whether or not it is sort of a romantic destination or how it can be a romantic destination. And then just sort of traveling there and writing about it is always, always really helpful. So yeah.
All right. Let me ask you this. Like because when people like think honeymoon, I feel like they're always thinking international, right? They're always, mm-hmm. but you just gave that example of honeymooning in Vermont, which to me, I'm like, people do that, but obviously people do that.
You honeymoon technically in Arizona. So I mean, anything's acceptable.
Yeah.
Right. And you've got like Sedona and like the, the Grand Canyon. Yeah.
Yeah. So are there places, you've kind of touched on internationally, are there places domestically here in the U.S. you're like, you know what, these are pretty good honeymoon spots or couple travel spots to hit up?
Yeah. And again, I think it just depends on what you want to do for your honeymoon. As someone who does like activities a lot, I would say some of the national parks are fantastic. Like Glacier National Park is beautiful. Yellowstone, do the Mighty Five in Utah. Mm-hmm. That would be really epic. The Smoky Mountains.
Yep.
Just all of those things would be really cool if you're the type of couple that just wants to like get a cabin somewhere and go hiking and really enjoying that. Mm-hmm. As far as beaches, you've got like lots of them in Florida and of course in the South, but there's also Puerto Rico. There's also Hawaii. All have lovely destinations. And then of course, if you want some adventure too, there's Alaska and like, you know, going up there and seeing the glaciers and, you know, the wildlife and different things. So there's just, I feel like it's hard to say, or if you want cities, I'm like, oh, the possibilities are endless.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cause there's also lots of great cities. There are people that honeymoon in New York or in Miami or San Diego or LA or something. So there's just kind of, I don't know. It's, I have a whole blog post about 29 great destinations in the US for a honeymoon. That's great to check out for people. Cause it's all, it's got everything between like national parks to cities to, you know, just beautiful nature, different things like that. Yeah. So it's all over.
That's a good
US
thought.
Has some beautiful place. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. We'll have to link that one in the description below. I mean, we'll link to everything, but that's a good one.
Yeah.
I want to see that list too. I mean, we've already taken our honeymoon, but we can take another one. I mean, our 8th anniversary is coming up.
Yeah.
The honeymoon doesn't have to end.
That's exactly.
Right. That's right.
Exactly.
So when you're not traveling, what's a typical day look like for you? Because obviously, I mean, like, We kind of touch on that here on like on this podcast, like behind the scenes of like what it takes to create YouTube videos or blog posts or whatever and all that. So like what, like when you're not traveling, what's that look like for you?
Well, for the most part, I am in pajamas, so not dressed up. I know. I feel like a lot of people, you know, when you say that you work in travel, they're like, oh, it's gotta be so exciting. And it definitely is for sure. But I would say like, again, 75% of the time I look like a hermit, like crouched over my computer, just like editing and writing and things. But it does depend on the day. Like after this, I'm planning to write another blog post for Worldwide Honeymoon. Mm-hmm. And then some days I switch to France Voyager and work on blog posts for that. And some days I do, you know, social media where I try to figure out what to post on so social much. Media that's going to do well.
Yeah.
Or, yeah, I mean, some of that's, it's just kind of a mix of everything. And then once a week I'm editing the podcast and sort of planning out the next week's podcast episode. And then on the weekends, we'll typically record that episode and stuff. So it just, it's kind of different every day, but the pattern is more like writing, editing, social media, all the behind the scenes work that people just don't think about when they read a blog post that goes into it. Cause it takes at least a couple days to get it from an idea and the research for it to on the paper to, you know, the editing bit and getting all of that and the editing the photos and all of the things that go into it. So that's pretty much a typical day for me is doing one of those things for most of the day and just getting more content, creating content for all three of my big platforms.
Golly, that's so much content. And I love that your background was in accounting. So you had nothing in the, you weren't doing anything, I guess, artistically or writing or anything like that. How did you teach yourself these skills? Was it self-taught or did you take classes or what did that look like?
I will say that I remember when I first started my blog, I was like, man, I really wish I would have had like a journalism background or like a social media background, a marketing background. But you can learn to pretty much do anything. And I remember I took Nomadic Matt's like superstar blogging course, and that was more technical, sort of getting it off the ground, how to set up your website, which was very helpful. And then you just kind of like, you go to conferences and you meet people and they sort of become mentors to you and you sort of learn along the way. But for the most part, it was, I know I did superstar blogging. And then later on, I started learning about SEO because I was like, that's what's really going to like get my blog to rank is when I please the Google gods, as I like to say.
Google.
Yeah.
Forever battling Google.
Make them happy.
Yeah.
I know. Yeah. Gosh, especially with this new update where it's like, you type in like, how do I spend 3 days in X? And it's like, the first thing is a TripAdvisor query from like 10 years ago right now. And I'm just like,
put mine up there. Yeah.
But that's, I don't, so I can go off about it.
I get it.
Helpful content update. Yeah. No, but anyway.
It's always like trying to figure out what Google wants and like balance actual good content with like kissing Google's butt all the time.
I feel like Sarah feels seen right now. She's that's exactly what I'm talking about. Yeah.
Yes.
The vlog is very new for us, but I love it. I am like, absolutely loving SEO. But it is, I mean, it's like every time you start to get a feel for it, they do another one of their core updates and it's like you're back to square one. Mm-hmm. And it's, yeah. Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Is this something
it's ever changing?
It is.
Is this something that do you find tedious or do you love it? Like, do you, I mean, like, obviously I feel like there is some sort of love in here that you keep on doing it, but is it more the love of travel or the more of love of helping other people and, you know, researching and doing that?
I would say both. I mean, it always makes me super happy to see people like in my inbox reaching out and saying that they really enjoyed my content or they found it helpful. Like, that's what definitely keeps me going at the end of the day. Mm-hmm. But I also am obsessed with travel. Any chance I get, I'm always looking up flights and different things and yeah. Like, oh, this would be a great idea. So it's great to have a creative outlet for that because I never thought I would be a person who wrote all the time. As someone who's an accountant, I thought I'd be with those spreadsheets day in and day out. So it's nice to actually get to stretch that creative muscle and be able to write and to help people with their trips and their honeymoons, especially something as important as a honeymoon. You feel like you got to like really go on. Make it good.
Yeah. Get one shot.
Oh, I didn't even think about that. Like, I mean, not to put pressure on you, but like, you're kind of on like the line for these people's honeymoons if they're specifically going and like, if they have a horrible time. Well, you know,
I mean, I've looked up honeymoon destinations and we've been married for years now, but I just know that those are going to be like good, maybe good and relaxed. Like, they're going to be very well thought out trips.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be for somebody's honeymoon. It could just be couples travel, because sometimes we like that.
Yeah. Because I do both on the blog, couples travel and honeymoon. Yeah. So
don't put so much pressure on her.
No pressure.
No, it's fine. I get that. Like, I want to make it good because first of all, I want it to be good for everybody. I'm also a meticulous researcher when it comes to my own trips. So when I'm going to write, like when I write about something, I'm like, this is what I did or like, this is what I recommend and things like that, because I think that's important, especially when, whether it's a honeymoon or just a romantic trip that you want to plan together. Yeah. It's kind of nice if you can just go to one blog post and be like, these are all the great things to do. Yep. This is where you're going to want to eat. This is what the hotels you're going to want to stay at. Like, it's just so helpful to have one blog post to be like, oh my gosh, this is exactly what I wanted versus finding it all over the place and figuring it out.
Yeah.
Sounds like you've found your niche for sure. Sounds like you're really deep. I mean, I'm sure that accounting detail oriented kind of stuff plays a part here. Probably very good at that.
One last question about the blog, which is, and that's it. And so blogging has been around for a long time now. If somebody's listening to this or like, well, it must be nice, you probably started it a while ago, blah blah blah, is it too late to start a blog, or is blogging dead? Like, are people like, what are your thoughts on that?
I don't think blogging's dead at all. I remember in 2017 when I started Worldwide Honeymoon thinking, oh, it must have been nice for all these other people because they started in 2008 or 2012. Like, 2012, for whatever reason, was like one of the years, and 2008. That like, those people who started are like doing fantastic right now. And that's awesome. And I've even asked like one of my good friends who started, I think she started in 2008. And she was like, yeah, I mean, some of the social media stuff, like, it helped being on Instagram as soon as Instagram started. You know what I mean? Like, it was easier to grow back then.
Yeah.
But I don't think that blogging is dead by any means. I started France Voyager 2 years ago. Yeah. So, you know, so it just, it's the thing I think these days more than ever. And I know that like on Nomadic Matt's Superstar Blogging, he was like, pick a niche, but you really need to niche down. You can't just do general travel these days. Mm-hmm. If you're going to do that, you're going to get outranked by all these bigger blogs that have been established since 2008. Mm-hmm. So for me, I was like, I love France. Maybe this is sort of my excuse to go back to France a lot, but also show other people how to have a great time in France, out in Paris and all around the country. So I really just wanted a blog dedicated to that. Mm. And that's where that came about 2 years ago. So I feel like if you want to do something, you could do your own city that you live in, start a blog, somewhere you like to travel to a lot and you feel like you're an expert in.
Yeah.
Just really niching down and picking something more specific, because that's going to help you make Google happy a little bit. But it helps to like focus on that. But it just makes you more of an expert in that area so that you do outrank other people versus a general travel blog.
Yeah, that's good advice.
Yeah.
I'm we've had this topic pop up in a couple of other podcast episodes where other content creators in different niches besides blogging have been like, you've got to niche down. And every time I'm like, I can't do it, but I've got to niche down. It's like this lesson I have to learn one day. Yeah. It's like my biggest hang up. But I get what you're saying. And I know it's very important. Mm-hmm. Got to make Google happy.
Yeah. Well, yeah, because otherwise people don't read it.
I know. It's true.
Because, yeah, my first 2 years doing Worldwide Honeymoon, I didn't really niche. I didn't write too much honeymoon content. I was just like, oh, general travel. I'll just call it Worldwide Honeymoon. And it just did not work. And it wasn't until I was like, oh, like I should probably focus more on my own niche. And that's going to do a lot better than being like, here's an itinerary for something that like 20 other people have also written about and are ranking for. Mm-hmm. So yeah. That does help to niche down and really kind of focus on, you know, it doesn't need to be super specific all the time, but you know, a country or a city or something like that is always really helpful. Mm-hmm.
That's really good advice though. Yeah. It really is.
Yeah. So if you were going to tell somebody like right now, like, where do you want to go? Like, if you could pick up and go anywhere right now, where would that be?
Oh, Japan.
Oh, okay.
That was a good answer.
You didn't take near as long as I thought you were going to think on that. You knew Japan. That's it.
Yeah.
That's a good one.
Well, I didn't want to be like, oh, Galapagos. I was like, we're going there later this year.
Yeah.
But next year we're talking about Japan because it's a place that's been big on my bucket list for a long time. Yeah. I just really want to go to Japan. I want to explore Japan and see the different cities and the culture and the mountains and the food.
Yeah. Yes, the food.
Yeah. So if people wanted to follow along, they wanted more information, like how can people follow along your travels or find out more about you?
Yeah. So I've got my two blogs. There's worldwidehoneymoon.com and francevoyager.com. The podcast, the Worldwide Honeymoon Travel Podcast. And then as far as social media, you can follow along at Instagram, Facebook, and Pinterest at just Worldwide Honeymoon, or on Twitter at WW Honeymoon.
Kat, thank you so much for being here with us and for sharing all things couple travel, honeymoon, and your blogging information. This has been a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And just thank you so much for being here.
Yeah, thank you guys so much for inviting me and have me on here.
Yes. Safe travels, and we'll talk soon. Thanks for listening to What No One Tells You with Chris and Sarah. If you have a comment or question that you want answered on the air, be sure to send us a message to hello@chrisandsarah.com, or you can call or text our phone number at 423-825-9572. Thanks for listening.